I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Mitch Harper, BYU insider for KSLSports.com and overall good tune. Mitch, how are you?
Hey, Mitch.
Doing great, guys, other than my I didn't realize there was a thing for elementary kids when they finish their school year that parents have to give them gifts.
Oh, dude.
Even though at the end of third grade. So my kids, and I bring this up because, Scotty, I know you'll appreciate this because you tweeted about it a few weeks ago. My kids have been desperately begging for this new flavor of Prime, lemonade.
Yeah.
Lemonade Prime. So we gifted my kids today, ending third grade, lemonade Prime. So my bank account is just diving into Prime every single day. That's all my kids want, Prime.
This Prime drink is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And especially boys from the ages of, like, you're right, third grade to about 7th or 8th grade, it's like cigarettes in prison for these kids.
What is it? Why have I not heard of it?
It's the Paul brothers, or one of the Paul brothers, who started it's like Gatorade. Have you tried it, Mitch?
It's like a coconut water, but it's supposed to be low calorie. I don't see the hype around it, but
no.
Every kid just loves it. They can't get enough of it. So I'm for the first time in my life hitting up a GNC. They're like, why are you rolling into this place, bitch? But I'm hitting up GNC for Prime bottles all the time now.
These kids, man, and it's just the marketing genius of the Paul brothers. And it's like, it's a status symbol. If one of these kids comes, has a bottle of Prime, I mentioned, like, these kids are like, once they get a bottle, they won't throw it away. They'll put water into it and carry it around school because people think they're cool because they got a bottle of Prime. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Why? I can't even believe I've never heard of this.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's insane.
Are they expensive?
They're really expensive.
Yeah.
I actually bought a case of 18 at Costco, and I have Brody selling it at school. For $5 a bottle, and he's actually getting some money on it.
Are you serious?
He gets a nice return on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. Why not start your entrepreneurship right away?
Yeah. But he doesn't want to sell them because he wants to keep them. I'm like, Dad, I just want them.
No. Stop drinking your...
You can't partake of your product. Come on. what'd we learn from...
Fawn's Fudge Factory.
Well...
Oh. No, we
learned lots of things about Fawn's Fudge Factory.
You're talking about Beating Bad?
Breaking Bad, yeah. What? Anyway. All right. Mitch, we got a lot to talk about. How big of a blow was it for BYU on Isaac Wilson? Because Patrick Kinahan mentioned that maybe BYU wasn't as high on maybe Isaac Wilson as many people thought.
That's true, and I think the interest was definitely cooling off from BYU's end. I think they knew that they were going to be kind of buried on that top six that Isaac Wilson had, and Utah was, once the calendar year turned to 2023, it became Utah was starting to be the favorite, and it was evidence too. BYU the last few months has offered quite a few more quarterbacks. Demarcus Davis from California is someone that I would say right now is probably BYU's number one quarterback target in the 2024 class now. They've also offered Enoch Watson, a quarterback who's being coached by Ty Detmer and Max Hall in Arizona. And then there's also a quarterback out at Granger High School who was previously at De La Salle High School He's now at Granger High, kind of an interesting prospect. The name escapes me at the moment. I don't want to mess it up, but they've offered quite a few quarterbacks, and they so it was not a surprise to anyone around BYU. I think, but from a standpoint for the BYU fan base, it hurts to lose to Wilson because there was that feeling of that family was, you know, dyed in the wool. Now BYU, they flipped to the blue, and they were going to always go to BYU. But big shoes for Isaac to possibly have to follow into Zach's footsteps and be the quarterback there. And, you know, and I think that Isaac goes to a Utah program where, you know, I know Utah hasn't had the greatest track record with high-profile recruits like Tuttle and Peter Castelli, but, you know, he could go in there and maybe have a chance to compete at least for the number one job. I think he would have been given that chance at BYU too. But BYU really likes guys like Jake Retzlaff and Ryder Burton for the future right now. And then they've got those targets who I mentioned. So I don't think it's as big of a blow for BYU. They kind of saw this coming quite a few months ago.
So in terms of them seeing this coming, Mitch, was that kind of them getting word that he was hot on Utah's trail, or what? Why did they cool off on him from what you've heard or what you know?
I think it was just a feeling of they wanted to have, because with quarterback timelines with recruits, it's starting to dry up. I mean, the high profile 4-star recruits, they make their decisions before their junior year pretty much ends. I mean, everything in the recruiting calendar is just moving up so fast. It's rare now that a quarterback goes into the summer before their senior year and they're still on the board as an uncommitted prospect. So I think that they had to make contingency plans. I think there's always been this belief of if you're going to be invested into a quarterback, you almost have one or two guys and you put all your resources into them. And if you get any sort of intel that leads you to believe that you're not the favorite, you've got to make contingency plans because some of these other guys are going to go off the board. I mean, that DeMarcus Davis from California, he's lining up his official visits coming up to places like Washington, Arizona in the coming weeks. And BYU's got to find a way to get him on an official visit in June. I mean, June official visits were not a thing, just a couple years ago. So everything's just moving up in a timely manner. And you don't want to be left in a spot to where you have no quarterback in this cycle. BYU a couple years ago had back-to-back recruiting classes where they didn't sign a high school quarterback, and that's where it led to this year. It was so critical to go get a grad transferring Keaton Slovis because they just haven't armed themselves with many high school quarterback prospects, you know, waiting in the wings. So I just think it's something where the timeline has been expedited. And I think that they wanted to make the contingency plans in place that if they were left behind, which there was indications that it were, that Utah was emerging as a favorite, that they were not going to be left, you know, kind of going, oh, no, we don't have any quarterback in this cycle. Because at Power 5 football, you got to have, I think, at least one quarterback at every single cycle from the high school ranks still.
The reason, one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on, because I thought this was fantastic by BYU and a great idea, and I'm sure I know a couple other schools have started it, and I'm sure that this is going to catch like wildfire. But a essentially transfer portal combine to essentially bring people in that are in the transfer portal to essentially get a workout in and get some evaluation, essentially say, hey, look, if you can get to Provo and kick us $50, we'll work you out and give you a shot. Kind of give us the genesis of this, and I know you wrote a story about it at KSLSports.com, but I think this is a great opportunity for BYU to get some eyes on maybe some potential guys that may have slipped through the cracks.
It is a unique idea, and I think it's beginning to become the new trend, and it continues to show that how big of a hold the transfer portal has on recruiting. But, you know, BYU, by my unofficial count right now, they've got, and I've been close tracking this closely, they've got 83 of their 85 scholarships locked down for 2023. So they're going into the June camp season of recruiting with about 2 scholarships left on the board for 2023. And you've kind of gotten to a point with the transfer portal where the instant impact guys, they're off the board, they're gone, they've already been locked down to other schools. the rest become a situation where it's projection-based. They become, you know, those maybe last few scholarship guys or maybe some preferred walk-on options. And you're probably not going to spend resources to go visit them. So why not find a way to get these guys on the campus, give them a chance to have a trial, because they don't want to be left in the portal forever. They want to have another opportunity to play a high level of football. As BYU is now going to be in a Power 5 league at the Big 12. It's a great option for all parties involved. And I think that, you know, Nebraska was kind of the trendsetter with this. They were the one that first, from what I saw, created this back in the spring. And they announced it, and I think a lot of schools have followed. Colorado has followed. Even Utah is going to have a camp coming up here in June, from what I understand. BYU as well. So this is going to become the new norm in college football, to another evolution in the transfer portal. And I think if BYU can find a way to fill those scholarships, to bring more competitive depth, bring a guy that's going to kind of iron sharpens iron in a position room, I think that just helps. And I just think that this staff, what's been impressive with BYU staff, the recruiting efforts are a complete 180 from what it's been in the past. And I just think a testament to Jay Hill. His recruiting background has always been top shelf. I mean, you guys know that, but his days at Utah, he was one of the best recruiters in the Pac-12 conference in Utah's early days in that league. And his connections around the West and in Texas are top shelf. And I think the recruiting operation at BYU, there's still room to grow, of course, but I think Jay Hill's changing the game for how BYU attacks recruiting. And I just think they're not going to leave any stone unturned. And this transfer portal camp coming up in June, two different camps, will be another opportunity for BYU to find a way to round out their roster and bring as much talent and speed and possible depth that you could possibly have on that roster.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Mitch, you mentioned Jay Hill and his recruiting ability. And you and I both know that BYU's defensive talent isn't where he needs it to be or expected it to be. And he's gone heavy to try to bring in some good defensive talent to try to pick up that pass rush and to fill this system that he's trying to install. Do you believe that Jay Hill has picked up the personnel that he can effectively run that defense to a point that he can at least slow down, what, five, maybe six of the top offenses in the country?
I think so, Hans. I think that Jay Hill has improved the talent a lot for BYU. And I think even some of the returning lettermen, guys that were carried over from the previous seasons that are returning, they're going to be part of this group. I think there's enough there. I mean, there's still going to be some games where BYU is going to give up a lot of yards and probably a lot of points because I think there's some good offenses in the Big 12. I don't think the quarterback play in the Big 12 is that great this year. I don't think it's as deep as maybe many Cougar fans might believe. And I think that lends itself to some opportunities to surprise people. But I think the talent in the trenches has gotten better. I mean, it was a low bar. I mean, BYU's defensive line last year, I thought was, the last few years, I think has not been good at all. Since Tyrus Tonga left, there's been nothing really inspiring from BYU's defensive line. And a lot of that was probably scheme. But I think Tyler Batty's improved a lot. And I think that, you know, he's someone that's gotten down to about 3%, 4% body fat. He looked lean in spring ball. And you thought almost like, did he lose a bunch of weight? But he's maintained a lot of that weight. It's just he's trimmed down the body fat percentage for him. And I think Zay Banya, I think, you know, he's got to become more of an all-around You know, he's going to be that outside edge where Batty's going to be more that full rusher. I think that's a nice tandem to start with. And I think Atu Naisimahe in the interior, Jackson Cravens coming in from Boise State. There's enough there, I think, for BYU that they can be a little bit better than expected. I still think it's a work in progress for Jay Hill, and I think he would tell you that they still got a long way to go in terms of what he wants it to eventually become in the Big 12. But I think that Cougar fans are going to be a lot more pleased with the product defensively this year. And I think that what they've done with getting A.J. Vongpachana, that was a good addition. Eddie Heckert, I think, got a real big potential at cornerback. He could be that nickel corner as well with five defensive backs. I think there's enough there that the depth is a lot better. I think this roster as a whole on defense is a lot better than what it was a year ago.
What's your realistic win-loss expectations for next year? I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot. I'm certainly not holding you to it, but you know, where are you at on next year?
You know, I put out my game-by-game predictions on the site a couple weeks back, and I kind of went bold a little bit. I'm saying 7-5, and here's the thing that's, I think, maybe the bold aspect to that. I think 7 wins is bold, but I actually have BYU starting 5-0. I think BYU can jump out of the gate early and get off to a hot start. I think the schedule is pretty manageable. I mean, Arkansas is going to have one of the best backfields in the SEC this year. But, you know, Kalani Sitake has had a great track record in revenge games at BYU. He's done a really nice job in those spots. I think they could somehow pull an upset against Arkansas. I'm calling for 7 wins for BYU this year. And that might be a little bit higher than probably most projections. I think it's okay to say, you know, 5-6, but I'm going to go a little bit higher, and I think a lot of that is because I'm really high on the offensive line, the addition of Caleb Etienne, and then you turn Braden Keim probably into a backup, and I thought he was well on his way to being the starting right tackle for BYU on an offensive line with Kingsley Suamataia. I think that offensive line is where it all starts. That's going to create opportunities for Keaton Slovis to have more success. I'm not completely sold yet on Slovis. I got a little bit more cautiously optimistic with him after spring, but I think the ground attack is better than what BYU has been in many years. I think it might be the best running back unit, at least in terms of depth. I don't know if you still got that superstar at the top like a Tyler Allgeier, but I think in terms of depth, I think it's one of the better running back units he's had in probably a quarter century since the days of Ronnie Jenkins and Brian McKenzie. I think Aiden Robbins, Deion Smith, Hinkley Fulau-Rapati, that's a pretty good trio. And then you bring in L.J. Martin, who was a high school freshman that leader Aaron Roderick said in the spring, I would not be surprised if he comes in and competes right away. And that staff doesn't say those sort of things unless they mean it. So I think there's some really good depth in the backfield, and that offensive line, I think, is getting close to being where they feel really sound, you know, 8, 9, 10 deep at that offensive line group.
Well, that 7-win prediction would mean 5 conference wins because you've got the two. You had, yep, Sam Houston and Southern Utah. That I think you checked both those boxes, and we'll see what happens with Arkansas. But you probably favor Arkansas in their home stadium. That would mean 5 conference victories, and we'll see if they could do it, Mitch.
That's a hell of a year, first year.
It would be a great year.
Yeah,
if they could do that, Mitch, it'd be a great year.
It would be, and I think it's a lot of that's going to rest on the health of the team, and it might be a little bit bullish on that. But I just think, again, the dynamics of the schedule early on is what really makes me believe BYU could have some success. Because from TCU on down to the season finale at Oklahoma State, I could see each one of those games being a loss. I mean, Iowa State, I think, is going to be much better this year. I mean, Iowa State's coming off a 4-win season, but they're a very young team. I think that defense is going to still be one of the best in the Big 12. I mean, it's going to be challenging, but I feel like there's opportunities early on, and if BYU can find a way to stay healthy, and I feel like BYU's kind of been wired to be kind of an early, fast starter with their seasons. They're always the team that we're talking about a ton in September, and then they fade out in November. That's obviously going to change from a standpoint of the matchups they've got in November, but I like the potential of them jumping out to a fast start and having two games out of the gate where you are going to be sizable favorites, and I think that can help them create a spot where they could have that Arkansas, Kansas, and Cincinnati stretch where they could, you know, pull some upsets and get out to a really fast start and then try to really grind their way to clinching that bowl eligibility in the last, you know, 6 to 7 games.
All right. Well, Mitch, always a pleasure, man. It's good catching up with you. Enjoy your weekend, and let's do this again soon, okay?
Thanks, Mitch.
You bet, guys. Always happy to hop on.
Oh, and by the way, it just gets more and more expensive, bud. Buying a couple of drinks is going to turn into $8,000 dance lessons.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Enjoy.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Thanks, Mitch.
See you, guys.
You know, it doesn't matter. And by the way, Mitch Harper, KSLSports.com. It doesn't matter if your kid plays sports. It doesn't matter if they're in the orchestra. It doesn't matter what they do. Dance, cheer, whatever. Somebody out there is going to be taking all your money.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.